Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Kiwi, and with me is BP.
Hello!
This week we're playing 1987 Channel Tunnel. It was designed by Israel Sandrio and Sheila Santos. It was developed by Parapal Listaseo and Pedro Soto. I hope I said that first name right. Artist was Pedro Soto, and it's published by Looping Games, who I believe are out of Spain. And they have a whole series of these games. So they have, I think it's 1942 Midway. There's one on the, I think it's 1906 San Francisco on the earthquakes in San Francisco. There's like seven or eight of these games that are kind of in this same sort of small box series that they have going. So the game description is, for centuries, the relationship between Britain and France has been marked by wars and rivalries, but also by mutual alliances. Both societies have a markedly different conception of Europe, but an intense commercial relationship that allowed them to work together in a common interest, the construction of the Channel Tunnel. In 1987 Channel Tunnel, you get to put yourself in command of a team of builders from Britain or France to unite the two countries under the sea. In this competitive two-player game, you need to lead your team of workers, develop technology, and seek funding to bring the tunnel boring machine to the meeting point at the heart of this epic engineering feat. When the center of the tunnel length is reached, players earn points based on how far have they developed their technology tracks, which cards they have, and whether they haven't deviated with their machines too much. And the mechanics are worker placement.
Huh. Surprise.
And the box art is kind of a watercolory, maybe almost like a colored pencil type art of one of the tunnel boring machines. And there's like a welder, bunch of guys with hard hats. So BP, would you pick this up off the shelf?
Looking at the box art, not necessarily. And I mean, worker placements I like well enough. The history of it obviously intrigues me because I do remember when this was started. I was, you know, a child, but still, I do remember really the occasions of it. By the time it was done, I was in college myself, and I have actually been through the channel a couple of times. So, I mean, that aspect is kind of intriguing. I mean, the game description is not so bad, but I mean, just based off the artwork, I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah, I picked this game up because I heard both Suzanne and Mandy talk about it a bunch. I think Suzanne really liked it. I think it's her favorite of all the looping games is what she said. I could be wrong. But she enjoyed it. Plus, it was worker placement. Plus, I also agree that the channel is a very interesting topic. Mm-hmm. I remember when it opened. I think I was probably a little young when it started. I agree on the box art. I don't think it's anything that would jump out at someone to say, like, hey, pick me up and look at me and play me. So how do you think it's played based on the description?
Okay, worker placement, channel. So, I mean, God, we have one mechanic in the thing. So we need to, one person starting at one end, one starting at the other. So I suppose we put pieces next to where we're going to get pieces for the track. Eric, I need your help. we need to lead a team, develop technology. So, I mean, so you place your workers either to get a track piece or like the computer, right? Kind of engine building piece. Oh, and then you've got to then, or you could, so you're going to have limited workers, or you need to, based on all of that, because if you don't have the money to buy your tracks or your technology, you have to go like before Parliament or the people to help raise money. Boom. Oh, wait, cards. I'm bad at this.
Well, maybe you can do better and tell me about the channel.
Okay. This I feel confident about. So listening to the description, like obviously I went and found the history of the channel, but listening to the description and how like there's this back and forth between France. I mean, that is so true. And not to give a lecture here, but I love like when we start talking about the medieval period, especially in feudalism, that's where much of that rivalry really gets complicated, because for a while, the King of England was also the vassal to the King of France and yada, yada, yada. Eventually, it leads to this whole little thing called a Hundred Years' War, which, of course, did not go away. And especially when you put Napoleon in the 19th century into the mix, I mean, like, you know, he basically tried to keep the British out of Europe and his empire he was building. So, and then there's the whole idea of, right, that then, you know, they kind of collaborated in a variety of things. Most of those were probably the, you know, world wars, the Crimea War, et cetera, because, you know, they were still pretty competitive outside of that. What's really interesting too is to think about that whole description and the rivalry between the two places and the EU and the whole Brexit scenario. But all of that decide, ooh, and what will the channel end up doing with the whole Brexit? I don't know. The channel itself, apparently, so while the game is named 1987, because that's kind of the official like ribbon cutting, as we already stated, it took, you know, almost a decade for it to be completed. But the idea for it went back, I mean, at least some idea of connecting the places went back to the 19th century, which I find pretty interesting, that even as early as the early 19th century, at least for commercial purposes, there would be these ideas of trying to dig underground and connect, right, connect the continent, right, to England through France. It is super cool to think about the passengers trains that go through it. Eurostar is the name of the train line, and it's really super cool. And like, it takes like minutes to get through the channel. I think it's like 15, 20 minutes when you're actually like down under the ground itself. So it's pretty cool. And if you think about 1987 technology to wrap back up into this game, I mean, our technology has come a long way, and I'm sure it's going to need lots of repair and more funding. But it'll be interesting to see what types of technology we're going to be playing for in this game.
I always think, like, when I think of the tunnel, it always makes me think of the Monitor Merrimack Bridge Tunnel System, the longest bridge tunnel system in the world, or at least it was in the late 90s when there was a Modern Marvels episode on the History Channel about it. But I always think of that because the Monitor Merrimack Bridge Tunnel System in Virginia, and it crosses the Chesapeake Bay, and it is supposedly at the location where the Monitor and Merrimack were supposed to have had their brief battle during the Civil War.
Those are ironclad ships, for those who are unaware.
Yes, from the USS Monitor and the CSS Merrimack, and they both sank later on. I think one of them definitely did.
Hey, you want to tell me how to play this game?
All right, the game is going to be played over a series of rounds, and it will end immediately if a player's boring machine, not boring as in like blah, boring as in like
could be
boring a tunnel, and it reach whether it reaches the center of the tunnel or if a player reaches the end of their deviation track, meaning that their boring machine has deviated off the track and they're no longer going to meet up with the other countries, and that's bad. Players are going to take the role of the boring teams from France and Great Britain.
I think we players know who will choose
which country. Yes, I already am aware. The Great Britain player will go first, though. And this is supposed to be historical because the British team were able to start tunneling first because they already had a group of experienced tunnelers, whereas the French had to hire and train their tunnelers. So they started afterwards. At the beginning of each round, players are going to draw discs, and those discs are your workers. And there are four or five different colors in the game. So the colors are basically the same worker. So what's going to happen is you're going to stack all those discs of the same color and their public information. And then starting with the first player, players are going to do one of two things. They're going to take an action or they're going to pass. So when you take an action, you're going to take all the discs of one color and you're going to put it on one of the available actions. When it comes to my turn, if I want to do the same action, I can place a stack, but my stack has to be one more disc than you placed. So if you place, say, two orange, mm-hmm. I could replace it with three white. But those two orange then come back to me. Mm. And if I haven't played orange, they get added to my orange stack. So say I also had two orange. Now my orange stack would be four orange. And we'll go back and forth like that until either both players pass or they're unable to play an action because they don't have enough of one color to take an action. So it's a little bit different than other worker placement games we've played in that there are ways to use the actions that have already been used. So once you pass, you're going to there's a possibility you could keep some of your discs and you'll have the option to do that, or you're just going to return them back to the bag. And then once both players have passed, all the discs that have been used will get returned to the bag, and then we'll go on to the next round. So the actions that you can take, you can plan. So that allows you to, so in front of both players, there are three cards, and on each of those cards is three rubble tokens. We're only going to be able to see the very first one. So to plan, you can turn over the next tile that hasn't been revealed so you could see what color tile that is. So you can kind of plan ahead. You cannot turn over tiles in the other player's territory. So both players have to clear out nine tiles and you can't look past that. You can tunnel. So in order to tunnel, you just take a disc of the color that's in front of you and you return it to the bag and you take that tile and then you put it in your storage section on your player board. If your storage section is full, you can't do the tunnel action because you don't have anywhere to put all the stuff that you need to store. So you can't take that action. If you don't have a color for that, a disc for that color, you can do two discs of any color, of a different color, to also do the tunnel action. And then when you do the tunnel action, you're going to draw a deviation card. Deviation card will tell you which direction that you deviate, and then you'll shift your deviation marker on your player board to go in that direction. Now, what's interesting is if the British player reveals a blue token, they're only going to draw one, or sorry, they're going to draw two deviation tokens, because apparently the British didn't waterproof their tunneling machine. So every time they sprung a leak, it would short out their tunneling, their boring machine, and they would have to fix it. Whereas the French waterproofed theirs. So if the French draw a blue token or bore through a blue token space, they don't draw deviation at all. And then any other color, so white, red, yellow, or black, you only draw a single deviation. So French don't draw anything for blue, one for any other color. The British draw two for blue and one for any other color. The next action you can do is you can finance. So there's going to be some face down cards that have money on them, and financing will let you pay for more technology later. And essentially you just take that card and then it gets replaced. Technology. So there are two technology counters on our player boards. And so that lets you move the technology tracker up, or it lets you discard one or more of your money cards to fix your deviation. And then there are certain levels on that player board that will say like 3 million, and you have to have 3 million worth of money in order to go beyond that bar, essentially. And the technology will also give you, so it'll let you draw extra discs. It'll give you victory points. For the British, it will allow for an extra storage spot because the British only start with two storage, whereas the French have three. And again, that's based in historicalness as well. And then finally, you can do the development or secondary action. So the cards all have secondary actions on them. And instead of doing the finance, you can do the secondary action and gain whatever action is in that secondary action. And those are similar to all the before. So it'll let you finance, it'll let you plan, it'll get you technology, or it'll let you tunnel. And then it also lets you take that card. So in the future, you can also play that card once per round. The game ends if a player's deviation track exceeds -4 or they lose immediately, or if one of the players reaches the center space, then the player with the most points is the winner. And you're going to get points based on the cards you've played, the spaces their counters reach on the tech track, and deducting any points from the deviation track. The player who reached the center gets 2 points, plus an additional point for each rubble token face up or face down on their opponent's track, and the player with the most points is the winner. Tie goes to the player who reached the center first. And those are all the rules.
Well, let's tunnel.
And we just finished a round of 1987 Channel Tunnel. To recap, BP and the French in their tunneling machine reached the center first.
Wow. You had to make this political.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we should look up to see who made it, who to see if we were historically accurate, to see if the French made it first or if the British made it first. It doesn't say in the instruction booklet. So, but the British and Kiwi were the winner. They were a single rebel token away, but they had 37 victory points in the end.
I just feel like the British lost in this instance. Do we have to make it the British versus the French? I mean
they kind of,
let's be honest, BP loses all the time. Like, I'm okay losing a game, but we don't have to say the French lost. They finished their tunnel first.
Sure. Okay. So the French won in the sense that they finished their portion of the tunnel first. But while the British finished second,
There's
they did
no
it
buts.
With a lot more flair.
There's no buts.
Kiwi, what was your strategy? Oh, I look for victory points. Yeah. What was your strategy?
Try to thwart Kiwi, which obviously did not work.
Yeah. Now I found the card that had the get the sets of five. And so I was
which
just,
I didn't understand. And I was just
like,
wow.
That's what got me most of my points. In fact, there were probably some cards I could have played for their actions, but I didn't because I wanted their colors for more victory points at the end. And the one that I did, it was a color I already had. So I didn't need it. So that was my strategy. All right. Theme. BP, what did you think of the theme?
Did I feel like I was tunneling? I don't know.
I mean, I feel like I was. You know,
sure.
There was rubble out, and that I came out as I drilled further into the hole. My machine kept deviating. I had to bring it back, and I had to pay money to do it. Throughout the rule book, they sprinkled in like why they did certain things. So, like, you know, why do the British pull two deviation cards when they get a blue token and the French don't? Because the French waterproofed their tunnel boring machine. You know, why do the British go first? Well, they were able to because they already had the experience and they were able to start first. You know, why did the British why did you only have two storage spots instead of three? And, you know, there's this whole little blurb about, let me grab it.
Why did the British cross the channel?
To see what was on the inside.
Sure.
Yeah. So because the French coastline was flat, they had more storage space to begin with. But where the British had to start their side of the tunnel, it was steep cliffs. So basically they had to, you know, kind of like in Okinawa or Japan, I think they do it too, where they like use fill dirt to create more land. They basically had to do that. So they had to dump a bunch of the stuff that they pulled out of the tunnel in order to create more area to store more stuff that they pulled out of the tunnel. So great. And it says, after months of tunneling, Great Britain had grown by 36 hectares. and it took 36,000 tons of soil and rubble were extracted daily and dumped into the sea. So I like thematically, I feel like they put a bunch of the, like, why did these things happen? Here's why they happened. And this is why it is in the game. So I felt like thematically we were trying to reach the center. And I think the way the game is laid out too, it kind of like builds to that where we both have our tunnel boring machines and we're both going towards the center. Art.
It's kind of lame. And then like until we learned all the symbols, and then there's just, I mean, I don't know if this goes into the kind of the cards, but I just had to ask you all the time, like, what does this mean? What does this mean? Like, I don't know. It's not intuitive. And then the art's just kind of boring, but that's me.
Yeah. I think the art kind of goes with the box. Like, it's not super like standout-y. It doesn't really like pop or make you want to look at it. There was one card where you're like, oh, that's Margaret Thatcher. And then, you know, it was fun to try and guess. Not guess, but I mean, some of them we were guessing, like what country the flags were for.
Right.
And the art, at least, like, you know, we've played some games where the box art is one art style and the cards are something else. So at least artistically, everything in the box is the same. So you're not like thrown off by a different art style, but you really aren't looking at the cards for the art. You're looking at it for the symbols. And I agree, there were a bunch of symbols. I feel like as we got to the end, they were easier to understand. It wasn't like completely crazy, but I had the rule book open. So it made sense that you had to keep asking. And conveniently, because there aren't a ton of cards for the plans, and that's what the cards were called off to the side, all of them are in the rule book. So I could go straight to that section. And I knew exactly how that card played because it was well worded in the rule book. Mechanics. So You know, we talked about it a little bit at the beginning, and really the only mechanic here is worker placement. There is a little bit of, I don't know if I would call it hand management, but there is a little bit of management that you have to do for the rubble that you pull out. Because, and you know, there were times where I had to change my plan because I drew a ton of deviation. Like, I think I could have ended the game and around earlier had I not drawn as much deviation, but I didn't want to risk outright losing. So I had to, you know, get money in order to get tech, in order to go up on the tech tree and decrease my deviation.
Whereas I was just like balls to the walls and was like, I want to get here first because I thought that was the point. So I didn't care about deviation. I was like, I'm not at the end. Yep. I'm good.
Well, and I think that as the French player, you can do that, though, because you don't take nearly as much deviation as the British do. Mm-hmm. And there's also a chance. So there are four of the four of each color token in the bag that goes on for rubble. So, you know, it could have been that the French player had all the blue, which ultimately would have helped the French because they would have taken far less deviation. And on the other side, all the blue tokens could have been on the British side and they would have taken, you know, double the amount of deviation for the blue. So it's all chance that that, you know, it could end up that way. I think I ended up with two blue. I think you had one blue and I started with a blue in my rubble area because both of us started with one. So I ended up with more blue and that actually cost me. Because that's what caught, I drew two deviation towards the end that I had to get rid of. And that's why I fell behind a little bit. I did like I think this is a different take on worker placement where you just have to have more discs than are already on the spot. And I thought it was cool that your decision on where to go could be based off of, okay, but I also want those two blue discs. Because then it gives me more blue discs. So it kind of changes your thought process from a normal worker placement, which I really liked this take on that mechanic. BP, how did you feel about the mechanics?
There were mechanics. I put discs on things. I collected cards.
Rules. I feel like you touched on it a little bit. There weren't wording on the cards, but how did you feel about the rules?
I think like the first few rounds, I was just like, I don't know. Maybe that was strategy, but like rules, it was just, I don't know. It took a while.
I think this has the problem that you can get with some worker placement games is there are so many different choices that it can be hard to figure out where you want to start. I think towards the end of the game, once you kind of figured out the way you wanted to go, I think you had a better idea of where you wanted to go. Even if you didn't have a strategy, you knew what you had to do to get done the things you wanted to do, even if you didn't have them all strung out in your head. You know what I mean? I feel like you got faster as the rounds went on because you knew what you wanted. But then you kind of touched on it with, you know, the wording of the cards. It wasn't necessarily wording on cards. It was just all the symbolism.
There were just, again, going back to also that too many options, like so many options, just even on the cards of what you're going to do with the cards.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there was, you know, do I want this card to get rubble off my player deck or player board? Do I want it to use it for its big action later? Do I want to use it for its second action? Do I want to use it for money? Like the cards have so many uses that, you know, that can be a little tough. And I think another playthrough, you know, it might be easier. You have a better understanding of what you're trying to accomplish in the game and what the symbols do to help you get there. Rulebook wise, I think the rulebook is well laid out. Like I said, I liked it because there were explanations on why things were happening and they gave historical evidence to support, like, this is why the game is the way it is because it's based in history. And I really like that. And it had good examples in the thing and everything was well laid out. So I think overall, I didn't have to go back and look at anything rules wise, except for one thing. And that was whether or not you had to pay for both discs crossing the thresholds on the player board. Player interaction. How did you feel about that?
I mean, obviously it's direct. It's a two player game. I had to keep abreast of what you were doing because I needed to track where your discs were going. If I wanted your discs, I mean, my strategy was based around what you were doing. So
I'd say maybe a little bit less than direct, because I think like a lot of worker placements, some of that interaction comes from I went to a spot that you wanted to go to.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's sort of negated by the fact that if I have a stack of one more color, I could take that spot anyway. So that it wasn't always a problem. Plus with all the secondary actions, you know, there were lots of other places to go. So while I don't think I was playing a solo game, I don't think it was a direct conflict type of two-player game like you would normally have, which can be nice, you know. Maybe I don't want to directly conflict. Maybe I just want to have this. It's a race game, essentially, with some obstacles, and those obstacles can be the other player playing into spaces. But so I guess the question, BP, would be, would you play it again?
No.
You wouldn't? Okay, no. Why not?
Not very fun.
Okay.
There is just the strategy. I don't know. I mean, look, you killed me 20 points ahead of me. Like, I don't know. I struggled a lot in the beginning. Like, I think if you go back through the recordings, you'll hear I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I don't care. I don't understand. Like, yeah, there was just too many options, maybe, which is really disappointing because I love history. And this is like living history for me as I lived through it. But it's just like, you know, we've played other history two-player games in the past, and maybe they're just not for me. I mean, aside from Watergate, I feel like I've not enjoyed these history two-player games. Like this and then that Schmier one with Revolution.
Yeah, Revolution of 1828. Yeah,
like, no. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. I would play it again. It's a worker placement game. I liked it. I'll have to rethink maybe it being in the collection. It is in the collection.
It is in the collection. I mean, you should play with other people.
Yeah. I will see if maybe the reaction is different from different folks. But yeah, I liked it.
Good.
Yeah. So there you go. And that was 1987 Channel Tunnel by Looping Games.
So if you have any other two-player games that you would like to recommend for us, or history games, like, try to change BP's mind on these things. I obviously love history. So email us, firstturntabletop@gmail.com, or DM us on the Instagram, the Twitters, firstturncast. And of course, the podcasting camel, like in the tunnel, is just like, please, 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 please don't forget to rate. Review, subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. That was in the tunnel. Get it?
Do. Yeah, it's the sound of a tunneling machine.
Tried to thwart you at every stage.
We're going to discard poor Denmark again.
Eric would be so disappointed in us. Let's get rid of Ireland.